Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We will be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm so glad you're here. Today with me, it's Spencer Shannon. Spencer has a great background. It's one that maybe people might be afraid of, but you definitely shouldn't, because the experience that Spencer has is one that I want to share with you, because it's all about making it simple. And as entrepreneurs, CEOs, and leaders, it's all about simple. So I hope I didn't wreck your theme today, Spencer, but welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Spencer, we're going to start out with your background, because I think it's really important that people understand your background. The context in which you do everything today, I know, comes from your background.
Yeah.
So Spencer's a CPA, right?
Correct.
CA.
Yep. It's a bonus degree, because when I did it, there was CPA, CGA, and CMA. I got a CA, and then they merged them. So now I have a CPA as well. So it sounds like I've got a couple degrees, but it was a bonus way of looking like I have an extra degree. But I am a CPA, correct?
Yes. So expert, right?
Yes.
Expert in finance, accounting. But the thing that goes along with that, which is fantastic, is your experience, your 15 years being an entrepreneur. So give us a little context and, you know, take us on a little story, a little ride, yeah, or, you know, through your background.
Sure. The CA, the CPA part, like, I actually didn't know what I wanted to do. I was coming out of university and I'm like, oh, I don't know. And it's actually suggested by my dad, who has his own specialty tax practice. And it wasn't like I was following in dad's footsteps. It was literally like, I don't know what to do. Like, I was kind of like late in figuring out who I was and what I wanted to be. So I went on this CA program with 3 years thereabouts and literally drove in every day physically ill. I hated everything about accounting. It was literally awful. But what am I going to do? I don't quit things, really. And, you know, in my mind, you need another degree. So got that, left pretty much right away. Still didn't know what to do. Went into investment banking, became an investment banking analyst for RBC Dominion Securities,
the largest
investment banking firm in Canada, which was an interesting experience. And I was an analyst, which, you know, you can put whatever derogatory term you want on analyst. That's what I was. Typically, I had a roommate at the time and I'd leave before he was awake and I'd often be home after he was in bed. I'd throw the paper down the hall towards his room. He said that was his alarm clock. He knew it was time to get up when I was on my way off to work. Again, I didn't really enjoy it. And so through a coincidence, I ended up meeting my then business partner and he's like, hey, do you want to buy a business to buy? And the funny thing was, I was a CPA, I was an investment banker. I knew how to do deals. I understood the finance side. He didn't have a degree. He'd never had like a normal job. He was just this entrepreneur that did a bunch of stuff and we're like, hey, we might do well together. So we got together and we actually bought a business. And for me, that was the job. I'd done the deal. I'm not a lawyer, but you see enough agreements, you kind of know how to work through them. And the funny thing is, so we ended up with this business and it was a manufacturing business. We made skincare products, contract manufacturing and private label.
Wow.
And I sat down at my desk the first day, like, I don't know what to do. Like, I literally, like, I did the deal. Like, my job's over. All I'd ever really done is you go in for 2 or 3 weeks, do the job, you come out. And like, there was all the people telling me where to go and what to do. So I'd never actually done it. And so I made every mistake possible.
As we do.
And literally had no idea. And just sort of like the phone rang. So I answered the phone and we were doing a few million bucks at the time. And so, you know, I had to pick up the phone. There was a problem. So I'd run down on the shop and I'd try and fix it. And then somebody, and I just went and did everybody's job for them because I'd work hard and I, you know, cared and it was my business. So made literally, if there's a mistake to be made, I made it. And I probably made it more than once. Did not know about anything like business systems, you know, like, you know, if we had a Metronomics, not to promote you, but like if we had a Metronomics or even something similar at the time, it would have made all the difference.
This is what we were looking for, all of us.
Yeah. And so when I did, and for me, a lot of my learning came through the Entrepreneurs Organization. I was like, oh my God, there's a different way. And I saw someone speak. My partner and I were there and we looked at each other. We were just laughing because we're like, oh my God, like how bad are we? So, you know, then went through the process of actually putting some business systems in place.
Right.
Along the way, my business partner, who had another business, which was construction, building high-end custom homes in Vancouver, that was his business when he invited me to find another business together. He invited me and his partner exited, and he said, why don't you come and be a partner, with the idea of processing me out of the business. And so I became a partner in that business as well, and decided very quickly that he was the advantage of that business. So in terms of, it's hard to process when you see somebody sit with clients and the client says, we'd like this. And he'd sit back and he'd think, and he'd go, that's not what you want. You want this. And they'd be like, that's what I want. I'm like, I can't process that. You're psychic. So anyway, I was a partner in that business for a number of years. And then around the same time, my dad, who, yes, is a CPA, he was also had a cold storage business, and his partner retired. So I came in, I became partners with my dad, which is a whole different suite of fun and interest and challenge and all that stuff. My dad, who turned 80 somewhat recently, is still working full time in the tax practice. He's a machine. So I had all of those businesses, and you know, I was kind of like in my early mid 30s. I'm like, you know, we had a couple hundred employees, and I'm like, how did this happen? Like, this kind of like I just sort of woke up one day. But you know, kind of post 2008, I spent a lot of time not sleeping. One of our businesses was real estate backed.
Yes.
Another one was, you know, high end construction. We'd put a general manager in place of the manufacturing business with the idea to extract out of the day to day, and all of that compounded. It was kind of like a perfect storm. Yeah. Spent a lot of time not sleeping, et cetera, and eventually, aside from that, I also realized I wasn't connected to the businesses. I wasn't in love with the businesses.
Right.
So went through a journey to exit all of them through various means.
Wow.
Best described as not quite as good as I would like, but maybe better than it could have been.
Yes. So, that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, it was okay. And it set me up to be like, okay, what do I actually want to do in life?
Right.
Kind of brings me to shift in what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Long story. And I was at an event, and there was a finance speaker who was brilliant. And he actually had developed a lot of the system that banks analyze businesses, especially entrepreneurial businesses.
Right.
Super interesting. Now, I'm a CPA and everybody else in the room is entrepreneurs. And I'm like, literally like, okay, got it. Like, it was like super
so good.
Intense and fast.
Yeah.
But like, I was like on full, like numbers brain was on. And, and I'm pretty good with numbers. And at one point I put my hand up. I'm like, and whatever it was, I'm like, don't you mean 2.4? And he's like, oh yeah, you're right. And the whole room bursts out laughing because like, they have no idea what's going on. He's talking so fast. He's being so technical. He's given these formulas. He's over everybody's head. And I correct him and everybody just starts howling. And one of the guys at the table with me, who I knew, he leans and he goes, look, I know this stuff's really important. I don't understand it. I know I need it. Can you help me put it in my business?
Make it simple.
And so that was like a light bulb moment where I'm like, oh, you know, you've got entrepreneurs and you can say business leaders, not just entrepreneurs, typically who, or those who don't come from the finance track, it's not simple and intuitive. Whereas for accountants, in my experience as accountants, we don't always know what the entrepreneur or business leader needs. We understand accounting. There was this gap, this chasm. I'm like, okay, here's an opportunity. So
huge opportunity. You're selling yourself short. Huge opportunity. Well, financial clarity is critical.
Oh, and I, when I say opportunity, I mean opportunity to help and serve and create an impact and all of that stuff. So
I think it's fantastic because when I think about your book that you released, Entrepreneur Numbers, right? And I've heard you speak, I've seen your work, we leveraged your work with our clients,
thank you.
Right? To make it simple so that the story is understood, not only by CEO and leaders, but by the team. And I think
super important.
The big thing is that it allows us to create those pictures, right? Yeah. Pictures tell 1,000 words, but we have a story.
I always talk about like, what's the story buried inside the numbers? Because your numbers are dying to tell you a story. And it's the not ability to understand and read the story where people get frustrated and stuck. And like, oh, I got this set of financials that are in my to review pile that stay there until next month's come in. And then the old ones get put in the recycling and the new ones are in the to review pile.
Yes. When I think about, you know, what you're doing today to make that impact around taking that financial view and connecting it with the leaders in the business is a critical step, you know, to take both your understanding of that financial side and an entrepreneur to pull it together.
That's actually also one of the hard lessons I learned, because here I was with this manufacturing business. I was whatever I was called, the president, CEO, it doesn't matter. And I was a CPA, so I understood our numbers. And manufacturing is quite complicated. You know, we had 6,000 SKUs. We had, you know, a warehouse. We had WIP. We had all the different things. Manufacturing is among the more complex from understanding and accounting perspective. Yeah. And so I would get the numbers and I'd sort of like run with it. But like, it took me a while to realize that a lot of the leaders, other leaders in the business, felt like they should know this stuff. And so there's a lot of embarrassment. There's a lot of shame around not being financially empowered. And it's so it's like they kind of maybe sit in the corner. I was doing to them what that speaker was doing to all the entrepreneurs, speaking all of this finance stuff, assuming everybody knew it. And so it's these other leaders that are sitting here going like, okay, well, I kind of should know this. And they maybe know a little bit of it, but it's like they're actually a bit ashamed to say, hey, I actually don't understand this. And they're the ones making decisions based off these numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that happens a lot. And, you know, a little something about my own background that that you probably don't know that made me laugh when you're telling your story at the beginning is like, I do have an accounting degree. Yep. I have an accounting degree and I did it. And like when you're going like, I just hating it, I'm showing up and still I'm doing it. And I showed up for my fourth year seminar in my business degree. I was an accounting major and the prof was like, I can't believe you're still here.
To you.
Right? to me. I can't believe that you've made it this far. Yeah. And it's not that I wasn't good at it.
It's that
he knew I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
But I knew I needed to understand it. And we as business people shouldn't have to go get those degrees, honestly, to actually understand the numbers, to connect to the team, to build our business. And that's why I love Entrepreneur Numbers.
Yeah. And really the crux is the empowerment over it. It's not being an accountant to understand accounting information. Yeah. What it is, it's about empowering yourself as a business leader to demand information in a way that the stories are already brought out.
Yeah.
So it's not up to you to interpret
confidence,
them. Yeah.
Right? That you understand the story that is being usually handed to you. And I think one of the things, and you've probably seen this too, that we see a lot is like, maybe it was a bit of my background, but a bit of like having a score. Like I wanted to see as up to date as possible of our lagging fiscal numbers, right? Yeah. Weekly, monthly, right? To get to that. We also wanted our leading widgets, right? Out there. But a lot actually are, you know, I run into entrepreneurs and CEOs and leaders who are, you know, talking about getting their financial statements at the end of a quarter and only quarterly.
Yeah.
And a little bit of it is, is it avoidance? Right. Because really, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right. And I, you know, sorry if that's disrespectful to people listening.
It hurts your heart to hear like you're getting it quarterly. Yeah, I know.
So much. Yeah. Because when I think of, you know, a game being played, you know, our financials are a lagging score.
Yeah.
You know, the further up chain, you know, that's why we use the non-fiscal widgets that are all attached. It's like getting out in front of it. And we should never be surprised with the lagging score that we're losing the game.
Exactly. And I think it's really important to distinguish those two things. And the way I think about financial information, the financials, and I may be oddly a little less stressed if you get it on the third, the fifth, the eighth day of the month, as long as it's not at the end of the quarter. To me, the core of those lagging is because they're telling a story of some root problems within the business.
Yeah.
And so using the historical financials, it's done. Last month is done. We're on, you know, whatever it is today.
Yeah.
Last month is done. We can't do anything about last month. I mean, there's some accounting hokery pokery you can do, but
but
ignore that garbage for a moment.
But factually.
Yeah. Cash in, cash out, like all that stuff is done. Yeah. And so we can't do anything about it. So whether you know that on the 5th or the 9th or the 12th, honestly, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, with the leading. But what it allows us to do is look backward and say, hey, for 3 months in a row, this same problem has been occurring. We've got this problem with our market. We've got our problem with our expenses. We've got our problem with whatever. And those to me are the stories, or what's the root issues that's facing the business so we can fix it in the future.
Yeah.
And then the forward looking, all of the kind of the future, the leading metric stuff, that's supporting what we've learned in the past, what we need to change. And now we can focus on that and make it better from the, I'm a little less fixed on exactly, you know, this day or that day, because it's about fixing the future, not about worrying about the past.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that played into maybe our own journey in our companies was, you know, shortening the lag after the end of the month to receiving that information, because that's what it is. It's factual information. And one of the things that really helped us, actually, I think we got it down to 5 days. Five days, seven days, 3 days, whatever.
If you're in single digits, you're doing pretty well.
It's good. Yeah. But the thing why we were, you know, pushing for that was one, to just get that view, that line in the sand. But the big thing was, is that when we were doing our monthly meetings, we had a monthly rolling forecast meetings.
Yeah.
The things that informed us and where we were going to end the month were in our leading non-fiscal numbers. The things that we controlled, the things that the team controlled.
Yeah.
And we had that score every day.
Yeah.
We had it every week. We had it every month. And we forecasted that score so that when we got the financials, nobody was surprised in where we were.
Yeah.
And to your point about putting that line in the sand, this is where we are right now. And this is our trends. And this is what's going on with our non-fiscal score.
Yeah.
We'd actually then take our actual that we knew on that date, and we'd marry it with our forecast that we rolled. It didn't mean we threw out our approved forecast. We didn't. That was like in stone at the beginning of the year, but it allowed us to get real to whatever dynamic was happening in the market, in our company, and like marrying those up.
Yeah.
And it's actually why I love, and entrepreneur numbers, why I love it. And I love the pictures because it allows us, I think of a company that I chair the board of, it's probably just under $1 billion insurance company.
Yeah.
But I think it's fantastic what they've done with these pictures to show the forecasted line, the actual line plus the new forecasted line. And now we have the picture and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Both at a board level, you know, I know leadership, you know, uses it for organizing the business and their priorities and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that simple picture is like worth so much.
I always use when I think about it, and since we're not doing like a visual presentation right now, is you think about a stock chart, right?
Yeah.
We've all seen stock charts and we're going to invest and you see the line, hopefully it's zigging up over time, and you've got the volume so you can see if there was any significant events around there. But like, imagine if you saw that in Excel versus seeing the stock chart. And it's like, if you want to see what's going, like you can see like in less than a second, you know, everything that's going on with the stock. You know, you may not know the drivers and the why, and there's some digging to do to understand it, but you can see the story of that stock in a second versus if you had like, and you wanted to look at a 5-year history in Excel.
No.
It's going to be like 40 pages long.
You just can't.
you just can't.
Your brain can't even compute all the variances, but you can watch it in a graph and watch it go up. No, it fell back a bit. Now it's gone up again. Oh, it's gone up again. Now it crashed.
Yeah. You don't need to know anything about stocks to understand what's going on with that. That's the beauty of the simplicity in the picture. The other thing I wanted to circle back on when you were talking about the benefits of that 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, whatever, is actually just the discipline.
Yes.
The actual discipline of getting it done. And that may sound funny, but like when we see people, and I'll tell you a quick story on this. This is a client of mine. I don't do a ton of coaching myself, but I do take on a few kind of finance related coaching clients now and then. And this was a survey company, and they had the problem you were talking about. It was, they weren't trying to, but because of some issues, they weren't getting their financials out for between 60 and 90 days. And we were looking at it, and it was a really healthy company, lots of profits. You're looking at it going like, why did the owner just cut a check for $250K to the business? That's a pretty frustrating thing as an owner. I've been in somewhat similar situations.
Yes.
And I was looking and I'm like, it's profitable. Everything looks good. Well, what was happening because of that delay is the delay was happening because their invoicing wasn't getting on time. Something was going on in ops that, you know, typically they were invoicing at the end of the month, but they had a backlog. So it was getting up at the end of the next month. Well, you know, if you did a job on July 1st, and you're not invoicing it until August 31st, and then there's a 30 or 60 day thing. And sometimes they were even 90 days to invoice.
Yeah.
You know, they added $2.5 million to their balance sheet just by improving that process, because you look at what's the story. The story is our receivables are the problem. What's behind the receivables? We're not invoicing on time. Okay, so let's not wait to the end of the month. Let's try for the week. Ultimately, it should be same day. But like, what are the tactics we can do to move that? And it's just that one, there was one thing that added $2.5 million to the balance sheet. And I think it was like 120 days by understanding that particular story.
Totally.
But if you're waiting for 90 days, that's 90 days where you can't act on that story.
Yeah.
So.
And I love that because it picks up where, you know, my businesses were subscription businesses.
Yeah.
Right. So those are tough.
Simpler from an accounting perspective, but not easy from an operational.
So, you know, we were good at customer funding our business from, you know, taking all the dollars a year in advance, right?
Yeah,
we take it all up front. Great, great way to do it. But how we ended up there was exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in Metronomics that is is well known in the Metronomics world, but maybe not well known out there in the rest of the world, is this thing called the key function flow map. Yeah. And it marries up your cash conversion cycle with the widgets, the things that flow through your business. And when we do those two things, it helps actually, you know, we want to bring that forward so that way we know every day that cash is not actually invoiced or collected on, right? There's days through that KFFM, makes a difference to what's actually in the bank, right? And we always forecast cash first.
Yeah, I 100% agree, cash first. And the other thing, what I love what you were just talking about, and this is where I get to with the simplicity, and it's like, you know, you think about ratios, there's ratio analysis, that'll drive you crazy and it's overwhelming. And what do I do with this? What do I do with that? You know, you mentioned cash conversion cycle, and it's like the job of the business leader, again, is to demand from the accounting team, what is the information they need? And of course, cash conversion cycle very much fits within there. Do I need a page of ratios that I don't fully understand? No, but if I know cash conversion cycle is 300 days and I have a target of 150 or I have a target of 90 or whatever it is, depending on the business, now I can start to see that story by picking those. And this is a mixed job of the owner, leader, and accounting team. What are those key stories? What are those key metrics so that I can do it without getting overwhelmed?
And, you know, we took that, like, I think back to my first business that we were trying to figure out the cash conversion cycle, and we were doing it probably, I'd say, more in spreadsheets and tables and things, which wasn't very exciting for anyone to pick up and own, except maybe me geeking out, my CFO geeking out, my head of finance. And I really wanted to share it with the whole team is how we ended up breaking it up in this key function flow map where marketing's in there, sales is in there, ops was in there. In our world, it was, you know, customer success, and finance was in there in the key flow. But then we broke it down. How many days did the flow and was in marketing? How many days was it in sales? How many days is in customer success? How many days in finance? So that when we were off our target or trying to get to our target, we knew where we were turning the dial. And so that's why the pictures are so important.
The other piece, and I'm going to use a different word than what you just did, because I love that story, is where to turn the dial, where the leverage is. And so again, so for me, the pictures, the data visualization is the way that makes me sound smart when I'm saying it. So, you know, when you're using data visualizations, when you're using that, to me, it's about where's the leverage in the business? How do we understand? And this again is what the empowerment is when you understand. You know, there's only a few key levers, financial levers in the business. There's only actually a few things you can do to drive increased profit or cash in the business. It's way less. It's like six or seven things. And so if we know what those key levers are and we've got the data visualization, those pictures to show us which one's off, you know, we always hear, and you know this probably more than anyone, is, you know, everybody talks about sales. What are your sales? What are your sales? Sales is one of several levers. But if your margin is out of whack, it doesn't matter how fast you grow, you'll still never make any money. And so which lever do we need to pull to have the biggest impact on the business? If we convert that to dollars, hey, your COGS is costing you $250,000. Your sales is up by $500,000. Like, whatever it is, we understand that lever. Now we can go, what's the priority? What can we focus on? Because just like that map you were talking about, which is each department having these number of days in there, which department has too many days? How do we help that department shrink it down? Now we're taking away this like overwhelming amount of data and financials and numbers and departments. Oh my God, okay, finance is actually the problem here. Okay, so how do we take finance from 18 days down to six or whatever the goal is? And that focus, that to me is where the simplicity comes in, is most leaders, most owners, if we know what the problem is, we can probably fix it. Not a lot of problems we can't fix.
And the visibility of it and the ownership of it. As a CEO, I felt like without that picture, without the KFFM, it's like the scoreboard of the business about the widgets flowing through the business and the days of cash that flow through that business. And without, you know, I owned it if it wasn't visible. I still owned it as CEO, but I was able to break it down with my leadership team to the person that owned sales or marketing or customer success or finance or dev or whatever else there was. And that was like huge. Now, like everyone had their pieces and we still did what you said. We still said, you know, right now, what's red, what's not working. What's the one thing we can fix in the next 90 days? Let's fix it. Okay. Our days of cash went down. Yeah. Right. What's the next thing?
I also love how you're looking at it by department so they can get their heads around what's their piece in this equation. And it's pretty easy for them to understand their piece and it's not overwhelming. And we're not looking at a big set of financials and it's brought down. And sort of what you're doing is exactly kind of that empowerment and that, like, what the expectation is as a leader of accounting. Bring me the data so I can do X.
Yeah.
Because not very often, and there's some wonderful accountants out there. I like making fun of accountants, but there are some wonderful accountants out there. Don't tell anyone I said that. And who will start to bring you that and help shed some light on that.
Yeah.
But remember, a lot of accountants, we come from, like, when I told the story of when I was feeling nauseous going to work every day, and I had 30 months of articling time with one of the big firms to, you know, train. I was learning how to do audits. I was learning how to do reviews. I was learning how to do taxes. I wasn't learning how to be a business strategist. I wasn't learning how to be a business analyst. And that's one of the other big gaps. I think a lot of business leaders, a lot of business owners are expecting the accounting team to come forward speaking like you are. We need to do this. We need to break this down by department. Like, I was trained to do debits and credits. That's what I was trained to do. Why would anybody expect me to be able to come into a business, analyze it, and bring forward those simple stories? No.
Yeah.
We need to actually think about this a bit different, you know. Or one of the other big complaints is, you know, my year-end accountant said they're going to do this quarterly strategic review. A year-end accountant's probably really good at doing year-ends and probably pretty good at doing taxes. They see a lot of numbers, doesn't mean they understand the operations of a business.
Right.
And so we're relying on them for things that aren't really their thing.
Well, and I think you actually touch on something really great that is an outcome of, you know, the pictures that you share at KFFM, focusing on days of cash and cash forecast cash first. You know, and we work with a lot of different companies where it's pretty, what I would say, traditional, where the CEO and the CFO, if you're that size business, or head of finance or controller, they're the only ones who are, like, really working the numbers and they own them all.
Yeah.
And finance is doing all the forecasting and they're doing it off of, like, oh, well, we increased for the last 3 years at 20%. Let's do that going forward.
Yeah.
And what we found, and this is just purely working the team and the connection to the numbers and feeling, you know, myself as a CEO owning it all, wanting to share with, you know, people who are way smarter than I was about their functional area and forecasting it, was like sharing it out. So sharing out, you know, the ownership of the numbers with more than just the CFO and the CEO. Yeah. And I know when we work with teams, as we roll in Metronomics, it's probably the greatest relief for the CFO to realize they're there to make sure the models are correct, to make sure the forecast models are done timely, but to, you know, pull the information from the leadership team that owns it and gets it into the model. That's why we use Entrepreneur Numbers with our companies all the time, because then the CFO or leaders has this picturesque story and their strategic pictures. Because there's only so many levers.
And a lot of people are afraid of sharing their numbers. But the reality is, given the world we live in, most businesses don't make as much as everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks the owners are making, you know, hundreds of millions, millions or whatever, depending on how big the business is. Most businesses, and, you know, you need a certain amount of profit to stay comfortable, to stay protected in case we've all seen downturns. So, you know, you got to have some financial wherewithal to weather that. But, like, often sharing that does two things for teams. Is one, okay, I feel a little safe about my job. Like, we're not actually going to lose our jobs anytime soon. And oh, I realize why they're not doubling my salary. Like, it's also kind of like, I know you're a fan of Great Game of Business.
Yes.
You know, we're actually individuals within the company own lines of the financials. So again, it's not all on one person.
Yeah.
I've heard some really cool anecdotal stories about, you know, somebody owning a part of it and coming back and negotiating because it's theirs and they're proud of
it. Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's like best practice.
Yeah.
You know, I learned a ton from Great Game, and I can't wait to have Jack Stack next week in Whistler.
Yeah.
I learned so much, and it confirmed so many things humanly I thought we should be doing around the ownership. And on the P&L, you know, best practice in the world of Metronomics is to have every line of that P&L owned by a leader or a team member. I mean, that's absolute best practice.
Yeah.
And not only the fiscal line and the assumptions around the dollars, but the widgets, the things that they own in their functional area that they are going to take on behalf of the team to actually make sure we hit the team score. It's fantastic.
I love that idea. I think it's super powerful as well. And I think, again, from a simplicity people are having to own a piece rather than having to own all of it.
Yeah.
And that rolls up and rolls up and rolls up.
Yeah. And, you know, funny, that's why the KFFM, which is, this thing that grew out of a few different things we were trying to do back in the day, is so powerful because the interdependency, we can't win as a business team without the interdependency of all the functional areas. That's why they exist.
Yeah.
And so if we can see who owns what and how they interact, you know, that flow through on the days and that we're a team going to help each other figure it out so we can hit the team score. It's just like, it was so obvious, yet when we're in it, as business leaders and as entrepreneurs, I love your story about starting out going, what do I do now?
Literally, what do I do?
Yeah. Well, I was there with you.
The path you're talking about is like things are super, super complicated until there's actually a way to do it. Until there's actually like, oh, okay. And I can't remember what is that saying about like, you know, you've done really well and everyone says it's easy.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, like, oh, that's simple. That's easy. Well, it's like, no, it was really hard to make it easy. But now that it's easy, it's just, it's got that intuitive level.
Yes.
So exactly what you're talking about. And that comes from a lot of pain.
Yes. From a lot of us. You know,
I know you're a little bit of your story as well. So I get it.
It's really, really good. Yeah. Well, I want to say thank you for being here. Yeah. I think I could talk to you for hours, actually, because we have such similar backgrounds and are out there supporting entrepreneurs and leaders so they can make an impact.
Yeah.
To make it easier so they can grow and, you know, whatever the goal is, they can reach it. I love that about you. I can't wait to hear you speak at Tip Top next week.
Thank you.
Making accounting not suck. I love it. It's a great topic. And I think it will be really well received from the group that will be there. And I know the things that you're doing today are well received. And thank you for giving me time today to talk about, you know, geeking out a little bit about numbers and making them simple.
Super fun. Thank you so much. Also looking forward to next week. As I told you offline, I'm bringing my team and they're all super excited as well. So we'll all have a lot to learn while I'm also sharing. So thanks so much.
Thank you again. And we'll see you next week.
Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus-year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.